Charlie Mitchell, what is that sound we just heard?
That was the sound on the Croix, on the St. Croix River on Sunday. Very quiet, other than a couple little peeps of woodpeckers, and then you heard the drumming of a pileated woodpecker that I saw along the river. And I had this, I was, you know, as you do, I had gone on a walk with my family kind of across the river because it's frozen over enough that you can walk across safely. And they had walked on home and I decided to hang out for a little while longer. And so I found this little spot right next to where I could tell there was an otter slide where otters came over land and then like slid into this hole in the river. And so I found myself a spot pretty close by, but upwind of it so that my smell wouldn't be. And I decided, you know, I was kind of done walking. So I just sat there in my big coat kind of against the bank so I couldn't be seen from the other side. I was just sitting there waiting. And of course, I didn't see any otters. That would be far too good of luck. What I did see was that pileated woodpecker you just heard. Flew, there's a kind of a beaver dam nearby that's mostly frozen over, but it's just like a little bit of open water in a place where there is very little open water anymore. Pileated woodpecker came along, landed on some of the logs that were stuck in the beaver dam, and then hopped onto the ice, dipped its bill in the water, and then tipped its head back and kind of like licked a little bit, and then it kept doing that.
Oh, wow.
It was drinking water, but I've never seen a pileated woodpecker drink water before. I got a video. I should send it to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a great little time to be on the river in February.
This is the Season Watch Pod on KEXE, KBXE. Thanks for being with us. I'm Heidi Holton with Charlie Mitchell. As always, delighted and curious about what's going on in nature. So tell me a little bit about the river. So it doesn't always freeze over? Is that what you said?
It doesn't always freeze over. For instance, I think last year, maybe the year before, I went canoeing in December. But that was an unseasonably warm winter. An unreasonably warm winter. It often freezes over, but not securely enough that I feel confident walking on the ice. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was growing up, it would freeze over much more. We were very used to, you know, the sound of snowmobiles going up and down the river in the winter, but that is not the case anymore. So now we kind of like take our chances when we get them. And this deep winter is, or deep cold has really allowed us to get across, which is nice.
Yeah. We talked before about, you know, what this cold can, the positives of it. But this week in talking about, again, tell us your dog's name.
Drogo.
Drogo. Good to hear from you, Drogo. Always
He's
curious.
Wolfing.
Yeah. That's, so, you know, we talked about the deep freeze, what it can bring to us. But also, this was the first week where I actually, even though it is getting darker later, is that the right way to say it? And I'm noticing that in changes. It seemed like an abundance of new things this week, even if it wasn't, you know, flowers or budding or that kind of thing. People were seeing things this week and paying attention. I don't know if that's a sign that humans need some change here or what.
Yep, I think that's certainly part of it. But I also think, you know, we're really turning the corner from midwinter to late winter. Certainly the wild canids are more active. You get some skunks meandering about. But also I think we need some change.
Yeah.
And it's getting outside and seeing those small signs of spring can do a lot to, yeah.
I feel like you jinxed it because, of course, we all know we can have winter in May where we live.
Yep.
But it does definitely change. And, you know, those snowstorms are different when they come later. You know, they don't last forever. And there's still enough, I'm happy with, there's still enough to be cross-country skiing. There's enough snow. We're getting a little bit more here and there, and that keeps it going. So I haven't had to, like, ski on dirt. So that's nice.
Yep.
Sometimes towards the end of the season, I'd like to still want to do it. Yeah, so it felt like we were being lifted up, but maybe I felt that way because of the report that we got from our friends way down south.
In Northfield, Minnesota. Yeah, the Herons class with Michelle Martin.
Hi, I'm Natalie.
And I'm Amelie.
And we're from Prairie Creek Community School.
Way down south, Northfield, Minnesota.
Amelie, there is one way to describe this past week.
Cold! Like, really, really cold. Like, you're gonna break your toes. It's so cold, it's frozen in your face. Ah, frostbite, not that bad, but you know what I mean. It's cold.
The ice was cracking and the snow was squeaky.
Our creek is frozen all the way, except for the deepest part, which is the underdrift.
I feel sorry for the kids who had to find out.
Three words, cold and wet.
They also found a deer leg in the drift. So fun. There has been a ton of rabbits around, and we've seen so much rabbit scat.
We have seen many bald eagles. Some are alone, which is kind of sad, and some are in pairs.
Hugo reported wild turkeys.
And Oscar reported 100 deer on his long early drive to school.
At Forest School, we had fun following tracks and figuring out what they might be.
We've seen juncos and chickadees and heard some woodpeckers.
Michelle saw a flock of over 30 robins. They have been around the neighborhood all month.
Next week, our fifth graders, me, will be at Wolfridge ELC up in Finland, Minnesota. I'm so excited!
I can't wait to hear what phonology you see and hear about up there.
Thanks, Natalie. This has been Prairie Creek with Amelie and Natalie.
One more step along the phonology journey.
Really good reminders there of what you can do even if things aren't changing that much. Count stuff. I shouldn't be skeptical, but do you think Oscar saw 100 deer?
You know.
We mean no shade, Oscar.
No shade. I mean, I can see, you know, in one of those, like, big farm fields.
Yeah.
A bunch of deer collecting. I would be interested in Oscar's method of estimating the number.
Yeah. But for me, I don't usually count, like, how many uh-huh. of something. And then we heard right after that there were 30, was it? It wasn't rabbits, 30 of some
robins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's another way to be paying attention. You know, those are things you don't have to be. I know a difference between a deer and a robin, so I can count those things and kind of just feel a little bit more engaged.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think like my usual version of counting is one, some, a bunch, ooh, I can't say that on radio. a really bunch.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are more scientific methods of estimating where you, like, if you, like, split the group up into different quadrants, mm-hmm. and then you estimate how many are in, like, this one patch, and then estimate how many patches there are in the whole group, and multiply, you can get a pretty good estimate, but you know, why not just say a bunch? But I'm glad these kids are, you know, thinking in numbers and yeah. trying to get some, you know, more objective data. We love science.
It would be great, you know, this idea of how do you estimate or numbers that you have seen before, how you approach it, what big number of something did you see this week? We love to hear from folks just like this classroom. You don't have to be as great of a performer as Amelie was there. But you can use SpeakPipe, and that's a great way for you to let us know what you are seeing out there, even if the changes are slight. It was sort of the week where people were starting to see things, right?
Absolutely. Got a lot of listener comments in, a lot of things on the Season Watch Facebook page. Yep, things are picking up for sure, and people are out there looking.
Text coming in this morning as well.
Oh, okay.
Phonology text. So Allie from Chisholm, so she's Allie after Heidi from
yeah.
the classroom. She said, I was listening to John talk about smelling skunks this month on my way to work. 10 minutes later, I park, I get out of my car, and smell a skunk.
Ah, Perfect.
In Cherry. She said, I'll see if the kids notice too. We're due to send in a report. And I said, that's the power of John Latimer. It's like, if he mentions it, there you go. You're going to see it.
Yeah.
And then
it to life.
I had shown you a photo that was on our Season Watch Facebook page. And we also, same topic here. We just got a text in from Alex from 50 Lakes. He said, good morning, guys. Last week, we had a shrike come and eat two mice from our garden bushes just outside my window. We also saw bobcat on Cass 155 on our drive back from the Save the BWCA Clocko event. FYI.
Nice.
Beautiful photo of a shrike there that you sent in to us.
And somebody else had a picture of a shrike. Mm-hmm. Well, not the shrike, but a white-footed mouse that was hanging in the tree. Probably the work of a shrike. The white-footed mouse is, I think, arboreal. That is, they oftentimes climb up and take over a bird nest as a place to spend the winter.
Mm.
But, it's kind of a cool little mouse. But this one was no longer among the living. It was larder for some other living thing.
I bet you can add to that, Charlie, about this mouse hanging in the tree.
Yeah, those white-footed mice. Okay, so to be honest, I don't quite know the difference of like how to identify the difference between a deer mouse and a white-footed mouse. They're very close.
Sure.
But they are super arboreal, and unfortunately, they're also winter residents of my home, along with house mice.
Mm.
But I much prefer when they are outside. I like to see them a lot. And there we had this bird feeder hanging right in between two cedar trees. And in the evenings, we turned on the upstairs light, so it kind of shone down on the bird feeder. We could watch this deer mouse or white-footed mouse climb up the cedar tree and then walk across this kind of swooping branch with perfect balance, just all the way out to the very, very end, and then make the hop onto the bird feeder. And it's one of those weighted ones that if a squirrel gets on it, it's too heavy. But of course, a mouse isn't gonna. And it sat there snacking away and then made the hop back onto the twig. Somehow managed to hold on until it, you know, stopped bouncing around and made its way back up the tree. It's amazing how well adapted they are.
Yeah, I was struck by how he was explaining there, you know, they make where they make their homes. Or where they're hanging out like that. And he said bird's nest, right? Or
yeah, old bird's nest. If they can squeeze into a squirrel dray, anywhere where it's kind of, you know, protected from the wind, protected from the elements a little bit. But they're so hard to get to exclude from your home because you can't just stop up all the holes at the bottom where the house mice can get in. But they can easily climb a tree. Depending on what kind of siding you have, they can climb up those.
Mm.
And so you have to secure your entire home from bottom to top all the way around the roof to try to exclude these very arboreal little mice.
What is arboreal? What does that mean?
Tree dwelling.
Okay.
Or
okay.
Very skilled in trees.
Okay. Because I was hearing it when John talked about it as boreal.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, huh.
Mm-hmm.
But now arboreal. Makes sense. I'm learning. Learning all the time.
Like Arbor Day.
There we go. These sort of critters, I like that you still are fairly positive, even if they are getting into where you live. I would not be. I don't love seeing them outside either. But John also talked about another little critter, the masked shrew.
Oh, John was talking about this in his phenology show for this week.
Okay.
From the muskrat to the masked shrew. I had a masked shrew in my house the other day. This is an animal that is not even as big as your thumb. One of the smallest mammals in the world, and one that somehow manages to survive here in northern Minnesota through the winter, active all winter, running around, eating insects, eating mice, eating whatever it can catch. The masked shrew is absolutely fearless. If you think a muskrat is nasty, if the masked shrew were the size of a raccoon, you would not go outside because they would be vicious. They are absolutely unchallenged when it comes to their pugnacity. They will take on anything, regardless of size, with the idea that when they're done with it, they'll eat it.
All right, so he's not talking about people. the masked shrew is not going to be attacking us to eat it, right? It's all relative to the size of the masked shrew.
Relative to the size of the masked shrew.
Okay, good.
Yes. If they were raccoon size, then we have reason to fear.
Right. Mm. Okay. I think the masked shrew is what my lovely cat, Aiko, brought to me in the middle of the night. And it was, you know, still alive. So it was squeaking. So that's neat.
What a gift to you.
Yeah.
No, those tiny shrews are absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. You can tell the difference between the shrews from like a mole or a vole or another little tiny rodenty looking thing, mouse. They have these really long, like very agile little noses with pretty bushy whiskers. Mm. And if it's living, they are super twitchy. They are always on the move unless they're asleep. And that's because these tiny little shrews are basically the mammalian version of like a hummingbird, where their heart rate, I forget how fast their heart rate is. It's something like in the upper hundreds. Oh no, it's 800 to 1,000 beats per minute, depending on the species. So that's just ridiculous. And they need to eat every 3 to 4 hours to survive. And so you've got these tiny little critters who don't hibernate out in the winter in Minnesota. So because they're so small, they can't keep their body heat. Basically, in terms of like cold weather, the larger your body is, the more body mass you have, the easier it is for your temperature to stay stable. At least body mass to, you know, your surface area.
Sure.
But yeah, these poor little shrews are losing heat like nobody's business. And so they have adapted to shrink the energy heavy organs, like the brain and the liver, will shrink down to a third of their size, or by a third of their size in the winter. And so you have this little shrew who's running on like two thirds of its brain and two thirds of its liver, running around every day, scarfing down whatever it can. It's just amazing. And okay. I have so many fun facts about the shrews, I don't know where to start. Okay, so to begin with, the masked shrew is one of the few mammals in the entire world that is venomous. When I say venomous, I don't mean that it's going to kill a human, but it has enough venom in its saliva to kill up to 20 mice. And most mammals that have venom use it like as a protection? And these are the only ones who use it for predation. So they like chew it into their prey to paralyze them. Oh. And then they can stash it and like come back to it later. Because again, they have to have a stash because 3 to 4 hours, they're on a 3 to 4 hour lifespan all the time. You gotta eat. And so that's wild.
It is wild. It's interesting. I'm also very creeped out, but you know, that's okay. That's a good thing. That's good to be curious. Because I wondered why... Mm-hmm. I mean, it feels like you have a cat, so you're pretty protected against mice, which I have just long time not
I had heard. A cat.
Oh.
Yeah.
But our cat, you know, I thought we were set with a cat because I really don't like mice. I got used to, she's getting older, so she's not outside quite as much, but they enjoy, you know, and I know that's wrong, but she loved the outside. It just was so shocking to me because I hadn't had her bring me anything like that. Also, I was dead asleep, so that's not neat. But it probably, so it could come in anywhere. I mean, one of the things we do is to stay warm, we're throwing wood into the house from the wood pile. Who knows what's within some of that? Those, they're kind of frozen together, you know. I mean, I don't know. That's one way where, you know, or we have the door open that we're throwing in for a second, or we're in and out. I don't know, they just sneaking in, I guess.
And like any way a mouse can get in, a shrew is even smaller. It can get in there too. But the shrews at least will keep the mice down for you. They will happily eat all of the mice in your house.
Are they smaller or bigger than a mouse?
Oh, they're much smaller.
Okay.
Well, they're smaller. But if you ever go onto YouTube and just search shrew versus, you will get an idea of the attitude these little guys have.
Okay.
There are videos of them like bullying like these, I assume, Russian fishermen for like the fish in their buckets.
Oh, wow.
They'll take on snakes. They'll take, they, I think the word John used was pugnacious.
Yeah.
Pugnacity, perhaps.
Yeah.
They are indeed quite pugnacious. Very fight on sight kind of attitude for these guys.
Do they wear masks?
I wish. But no, they don't. They look, they do have a little, like, darker color around the eyes.
I was going to say, why has there not been a story, Marvel something that's a masked
right?
shrew that's so much smaller than everything else, but can still do all these things, Venom and all these things?
They can echolocate.
What's that mean?
So, you know how bats can navigate in the dark
mm-hmm.
by using essentially sonar, but air? Shrew, there's some species of shrews that can do the same thing, including some here in Minnesota. So they don't have super well-developed eyes, but yeah, they can like find prey using, they just make little noises and wait for the noise to bounce back. And judging on how long it takes to bounce back, they know the distance. So that's incredible. Yeah, the venom, just ridiculous. And then we also have the northern water shrew in Minnesota, which has the ability to like run on the top of water. It has these specialized back feet that have like these little projections.
Not frozen water, open water.
Open, like, liquid water. And it moves so fast and has these, like, little kind of paddy paw or, like, extra
yeah.
hairs that kind of trap water, trap air, so that it gives them, like, a little extra buoyancy and run along on top of the water. They can, like, sniff things underwater by exhaling a little bubble and letting that bubble touch the thing they want to smell and then re-inhaling the bubble. Ridiculous. The shrews of Minnesota, man.
Okay, but with all of that said, even though a mouse is bigger than a shrew and a shrew can mm-hmm. eat them out, I don't need to worry about my cat. The shrew
no.
can't attack my cat.
No. And even the ones that have venom don't have enough venom to hurt your cat.
Okay. And so therefore yeah. can't hurt me. So that's all I need to
yep.
get out there.
Nope. Yep. You might like have a little swelling, but it's not going to hurt you by any means. No.
All right. We need to move on to some other things. I think
can I give you just a really
yes.
cute one first,
yes.
Heidi?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So when shrews give birth and the young are ready to leave the nest, because they don't really have very good eyesight, the way that they follow their mom is that each one like will kind of bite onto the first one will bite onto the tail of the mom, and then the next one will bite on the tail of the next one. And so they're just like this little train of shrews going out and exploring.
It's
okay,
like,
you're shaking your head like that's not adorable.
No, I'm just putting it in the context of like seeing little kids holding hands and a long trail of kindergartners.
Yes.
I'm just going to put it in that way for myself. It's uh-huh. personal.
Yeah.
It's nothing against you and your lovely fun facts about shrews. But I'm feeling the need to move on to a few more mm-hmm. things that we are seeing out there, and John had some more to tell us.
As I mentioned yesterday, Groundhog's Day was the halfway point between the winter solstice, December 21st, 22nd, and the spring equinox, March 21st, 22nd. And February 2nd is halfway between those two dates. So Candlemas is another name for Groundhog's Day. Punxsutawney Phil, I understand, saw his shadow, which means that it was clear. The whole myth around the woodchuck seeing its shadow on February 2nd is that if you're having high pressure and clear skies, like we are here right now, the animal will come out, see its shadow, and retreat. And since it takes about a week for each of those systems to move through, you're in a high pressure, that's going to be followed by a low pressure, and then another high pressure, and then another low pressure, and then another high pressure. And now you're 5 weeks in. 6 weeks in, you're going to have low pressure, which is usually cloudy, a little warmer, and maybe snowy. So that takes you up through 6 weeks. And then, of course, at the latitudes where groundhogs are even moving in February, you're probably now into some pretty warm weather, and likely your winter will come to a close. Here in northern Minnesota, if you wanted to see a groundhog shadow, you'd have to excavate it out of its den, its hibernaculum. It's probably 8 or 10 feet down in the ground. It is sound asleep. They have a hormone that they emit in their blood in the wintertime that puts them to sleep. If you were to dig up this groundhog and take a syringe and pull some blood out of it with that hormone intact and inject this groundhog 4 months from now when it is likely to be out and active, it would immediately fall into another torpor or another sleep generated by this hormone that is in the blood that causes it to hibernate. You are not going to see a groundhog here in northern Minnesota until the very end of March in a warm year and mid-April in most other years. So, and we all know that if you see a groundhog on the 15th of April, you probably are going to, you know, notice whether or not you see its shadow. You're going to have six more weeks of winter from mid-April would take you to the 1st of June. And that's usually, you know, a pretty safe time to plant your tomatoes. So I don't put a lot of stock in the groundhog as far as weather prognostication goes. Among the things that I've been watching this past week, saw some trumpeter swans this week on open water. I suspect that if you have open water near you, there may be trumpeter swans spending the winter there. The population has become quite large, over 50,000 birds, which is a testimony to the hard work of Carol Henderson and others at the DNR, at the non-game wildlife section of the DNR. Thanks to his efforts and the efforts of his crew, we have reintroduced trumpeter swans to northern Minnesota. And because they were never trained to migrate, they typically only move far enough to find open water. And if they have open water, they will stay wherever they sort of find themselves.
Another great vocabulary word there by John. We had pugnacity and now prognostication.
Actually, I'm very excited. We will soon be hearing from Carol Henderson. This is one of my favorite nature stories, is how the trumpeter swans got saved.
Absolutely. After being completely extirpated from Minnesota, now they're here. We have the largest population of the lowest 48 states.
Yeah. Do you get to see trumpeters?
Yes. Yes. I actually saw some on Sunday when I was out there. They weren't trumpeting, unfortunately, but I did see them flying along.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we would love to hear from you. I think we're all kind of in this together. Temperatures are getting warmer. It's not the deep freeze anymore, but it's also the time of year where it's like, wow, it's winter. Really could use some flowers and that kind of thing. But I think we can all get through this by just paying attention. We're going to see some of these things out there right now.
Absolutely. There are signs of spring if you know to look.
And we'd love to hear from you. So we'd love for you to use that SpeakPipe, and you'll find a link on that through our website and also through the podcast platform. Leave us a voice memo. We love hearing from you.
And we're going to close out today with a trumpeter swan call. And this was recorded in Hastings by iNaturalist user named Kim C. Wren.
And we also want a big thanks to you for getting our sound to begin with. And as always, our student nature reporters out there from Prairie Creek, way down south in Northfield.
And of course, our leader, John Latimer.